Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
DC Cab. They've got plans.
Where to, baby?
Nowhere with you.
And they care.
You charge Mr. and Mrs. Tumatu $195?
They had a lot of luggage.
Two.
We're the worst company in town, and we know it.
Get out of my cab, I'm rich!
You don't have to shut us down.
This company is closed, pending further investigation.
Make an investment in DC Cab.
If I wanted responsibility, I'd have been a damn sex surrogate.
Fasten your seatbelt. Because they're back on the street. DC Cab.
Hello, welcome along to a special Patreon edition of The Worst Idea of All Time with your friends Tim and Guy.
Come on in, put your hat on the rack, take your coat off. Welcome to the Patreon Palace, where you are our Patreon pal.
That's right. And this week, this day, this month, this year, we watched the 1983 comedy action film DC Cab that was renamed Street Fleet in some of its releases. The tale of a hapless group of cabbies in a rundown cab company owned by Harold. Albert comes to town with a dream of starting his own cab company, but needs to motivate Harold's employees to want to make something out of themselves. It's only when Albert is kidnapped that the cabbies must decide whether or not they are loyal to Albert and his cause. That's from IMDb user Josh Paznak. I don't know how this movie made it to the top of the pile, but I'll say this, I'm very glad it did.
Yeah, same. You absolute fucking legends. Anytime you want to come to New Zealand, I'll buy you a beer if you're in the Patreon club solely for you picking DC Cabs for us to watch. I had a rollicking good time watching this in bed this morning. Rollicking good time.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. It's really like it's a movie of a different era. And it's also a movie of a different genre from what you and I traditionally deal in together. Like, it was just so simple, low stakes, but competently done. Like, it's
you know who made it?
No.
Joel Schumacher, who you might remember from a director's commentary where we were joined by him as the director of Batman and Robin. He both wrote and directed this film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the guy's a fucking lunatic, but I love him.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I didn't put that together at all. Like, it's, I don't know, this is the sort of movie that I would have, I wasn't alive at the time, but happily go and see at the cinema, and like just know that, you know, to me, this is a pure distillation of what going to the movies is, where yeah. I don't have to worry about investing myself in the story too much. I don't have to think about the world. Like, it is pure escapism, and it's obviously it's not flawless, but you got a lot of different characters. You got a lot of people having fun. You've got a pretty flimsy story that kind of has enough component parts to keep moving. And like, that was honestly, in anticipation of talking to you after watching a movie, one of the most painless experiences I can recall.
Yeah, man. It was like a soothing balm in the middle of this season of Worst Idea of All Time. It was
absolutely
so lovely. And very importantly, and I'm sure you will back this up, the soundtrack was shit hot from Woe to Go. It was so good.
Yeah, it was really it was of the era. Like it was sort of a it was just like 80s pop, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was like there was a lot of synth. There was sort of hints of hip hop in there. There was a bit of funk, a bit of soul. It was choice. I dug it a lot. So this movie, I had no idea what to expect when I turned it on. I didn't know what the Patreon pals, you our good, dear, beautiful, lovely supporters, had provided to us. Sometimes you provide us with nourishment and sometimes poison. So when this started kicking off, the first thing that I was thrilled to see, 1 hour, 40 minute duration. Oh, wee. Thank you. Thank you so much. And then I start seeing all of these cast members pop up, and I'm like, holy hell. First of all, we've got Gary Busey in the role of a lifetime, just screaming every 20 minutes or so into a camera that's near him. Gary Busey, yeah. I don't think I've ever seen him in a movie before. I think I only know about him from his, like, late in life sort of apprentice
he was in,
zone.
He was in Lethal Weapon, and also, from memory, Point Break, like, but I feel like he sort of disappeared for a while, and I again, like, I only know a little bit of his mythos, but it felt like he sort of went off the rails. Am I correct in thinking that?
I think that might be true, and how could it not be? This was made in 1983, and he looked like an old crazy man in this, but then he was like on The Apprentice quite recently, only a couple of years ago, I think.
Yeah, he I felt like he was almost playing himself in this film. Like, it felt like, I think he did a lot of cocaine at one point, and to me it felt like he was sort of doing his takes in between having a pretty good time in his trailer.
Which is, I got to be honest, kind of, it's not cool to ruin yourself on cocaine, but it is kind of cool to watch someone in a film doing that. It's interesting. It brings a lot of energy, and at the risk of endangering some actors, you know, I'm kind of for it.
Would you describe this as an ensemble cast?
I mean, that's a good question, because when you say ensemble cast, I think of something like Arrested Development, where there's a lot of craftsmen at the table who are each bringing their unique bit of artistry to weave into a tapestry. This was like, here's kind of a clusterfuck of people who you know, but you'll be surprised at what they're doing and why they're here. Bill Maher is in this film.
I clicked on that about halfway through. I was like, I know that voice. I think I know that face.
It doesn't look like him, eh? But the voice is the thing that gives him away.
Well, the role wasn't a huge stretch. He was sort of just playing, you know, Bill Maher as though he was a cab driver.
Yeah.
Mr. T, lest we forget. Probably, well, I don't know what the you know, the billing was or who the stars were at the time, but he surely, I think, must have been pretty a top shelf get.
Mr. T sold this movie. I've got no doubt in my mind. I'm not basing that on anything more than just like my gut instinct, but not in the film that much, to be honest.
If you look at the promotional poster, it's Mr. T, like, writ large, standing above the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., holding a cab door that says D.C. Cab. So he was amazing. Obviously a big marketing vehicle. And he kind of is just doing his Mr. T shtick. At one point towards the end of the movie, when they're dealing with these kidnappers, they kind of misuse him in a very large and comical fashion. So it's like towards the very end of the movie when the cab drivers are rallying together to recover Albert from these kidnappers who kind of arrive out of nowhere, I thought. And he's on top of a building behind the two kidnappers. And you see him like put his arms up to make his body large and jump down as though he's going to clothesline or eliminate two of the kidnappers immediately. But instead, he kind of just lands behind them and then doesn't physically touch either of them at all and just gets into one of those sort of, you know, those standoffs. Like, it looks like capoeira, like Eddie Gordo from Tekken,
except that one of them has a gun pointed at him.
Yeah, but I'm like, he's so high up, and like they made such a big song, like you've got this action hero, you've got this physically intimidating person, and then the whole application of like the climax of the movie was just sort of his physicality and presence was vaguely threatening. They didn't actually use it.
This is what I love about this film and this era of film, because everything has to be kind of done in real life. There wasn't a lot of effects there. I don't know, it didn't seem to me there were a ton of stunt people performing these things. We see Mr. T and these big burly brothers crash through some fake windows to great comic effect when they enter the wrong house and just bust into this innocent farm couple's
that's true.
Home while they're having dinner. This is what I... There's a grittiness to this film, and it's a common... It's not just unique to this film, but it's like films of this era. Everything just feels really real. It's like way less shiny than the films we get now. Everyone's jumping on cars and shit. The cars all... I mean, they were dressed to look completely beat up, but they're genuinely fucked. Like, the cabs that they're rolling around in, you know, they look like they might have been dragged by something because they don't work anymore. And it was just kind of cool. It's cool to see so much imperfection in films because you don't really get that as much anymore with the movies I'm seeing at the cinema. There's too much money involved.
It kind of felt like a student movie with a decent budget. Like, also in terms of the way they distributed the story, like, everyone's characters kind of got a bite of the apple. Like, I was never invested all the way in the story, but I was also never totally disengaged. Like, they're throwing enough stuff at you that you're sort of like, yeah, okay.
Let's get into some of the journeys, actually, shall we? We're sort of talking around them. So, can I just kick off with Mr. T, what he's there to do?
Yes.
So, 1983, this would have been... Well, I imagine this must have been around the peak of the A-Team. For him to be the prominent sort of promotional vehicle for this, getting out in the cinemas. And he's just there to do his whole I keep kids off drugs thing, which is what like 80% of his career was, I think. And so there's this guy who seems to be maybe a pimp, but definitely a drug dealer. And he's got a real flash car. And there's a couple scenes where there's high school age kids who just flock to this guy to hang around his cool, shiny car. And Mr. T is a cab driver for this company called DC Cabs, which the whole movie's about. And while he's doing his runs, he periodically goes and visits his niece, who is sort of caught up in all of this. And he's just desperately trying to get all these kids to stop paying attention to this drug dealer with a cool car. And that's kind of his whole thing for the film. Would I be right in saying that's about it?
He's kind of its moral core. Like the cabbies with whom he hangs out, they've all got solid gold hearts, but you know, some they're pretty derelict and debaucherous. But he's sort of, he also like is some sort of leader figure, I think, probably because, I mean, it feels like even in the movie, part of it's because of his celebrity stature and also his physical stature. But like, you know, when Albert, who is, I would guess, the protagonist of the movie, tries to rally everyone together around this failing cab company, he's the first one to come over and say, I stand with Albert, like I'm in on this. And that kind of motivates a lot of the other characters to go with him. But he, like, it kind of feels like, he was like, well, if I'm going to do this movie, I'm going to impress my messages inside of it as well.
It's kind of, it's interesting that, it was pretty awesome of Mr. T to just dedicate his entire life to that. Like, all the celebrity and shit was basically him popping up in different pop culture franchises and going, hey, remember, stop telling drugs. I know you just saw me pop up in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but here I am in real life in a different movie, probably not for the target demo that I'm trying to reach right now. I hope you haven't picked up that crack pipe, you kids. You put it down.
Would you like to guess how old do you think Mr. T is now?
I'm going to say he is 68.
Far out. That's a pretty sound guess. He's actually 66.
Fuck, I was pretty close. He's got a cool story about why he calls himself Mr. T, and I can't remember. Are you looking on his wiki at the moment?
Yeah, I am.
I don't know if it'll even be there. It's more like a fun fact than something you put on a Wikipedia page for someone. By the way, this film was made on the princely budget of $7 million. And from memory, I looked up on IMDb before. I think it made like 17, something like that. So it made money, but not like a staggering amount.
Yeah, it was just to me, it feels perfectly of its era. So I guess the lead, the guy with whom, you know, we're sort of meant to be walking through the film.
Yeah, we're introduced through him.
Is Albert Hockenberry, who is I don't quite know. I sort of was just checking in at the start of the movie. Like, where does he appear from? Because he moves to DC. Was he in the army?
He's from the South. I can't remember exactly. I think they do say maybe Tennessee or something. And so his father has just died. So I think the guy who owns the DC cab company, Harold,
was in the army with his father.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, because Harold's a fucking legend. He's the guy who has this motley crew. He's the guy who owns the DC cab company.
He's the owner of DC cabs. He takes an Albert on arrival in DC.
He does, and he's very sweet. He's the new father figure for Albert. Albert's like probably 20 years old, but the other thing that Harold owns is a flamethrower, which comes up a few times in the film, which is very cool. So Albert enters, his dad's died, but he's like an adult, he's a young adult, so it's you know, it's sad, but it's not too sad. He has with him some money, which is later revealed to be $6,000 from inheritance to get himself started, and a pair of boots that are slightly too big from his pops. And he just, like, for some reason, has an absolute dream to drive cabs. Like, the guy is so fucking driven to be a cab driver. And, like, a big part of the movie is just him constantly bothering the guys who work at DC Cabs who do not enjoy their jobs to do ride-alongs with them so he can learn the job really well.
These sort of disgruntled, disheveled cab drivers for DC cabs, I mean, admittedly, they're working for a pretty ragtag company, but they all are sort of, we are to believe that they have dreams beyond cab driving, but the particulars of those dreams are never really spelled out. We just know that they're not entirely happy with their jobs, which is mind-boggling to Albert, who's like, no, what if I told you that this is the dream, that you are fulfilling your potential, that this is a realization of what you want to do? And everyone's sort of unsure. But then I guess because it's halfway through the movie and they've got nothing else on their plates, they all kind of are like, well, yeah, we better actually put our elbows into this because otherwise what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So he's sort of this... I found him immensely likable, by the way. There's something about his face, which is... And he's a Baldwin, but then I looked him up. He's not a Baldwin brother.
He's an off-brand Baldwin.
Yeah. He's confusingly... So he's played by Adam Baldwin, of the same era as the famous Baldwins and a similar sounding name, but an entirely different clan.
He is in Serenity, which I'm sure some people have seen. Very good series that was cut in its prime. And he's in a whole bunch of stuff. But he's a young man in this. It's freaky seeing photos of him now because he's obviously middle-aged. But he's a handsome, charismatic young dude who just wants to drive a goddamn cab. Why won't someone let him drive a cab? And
that
DC
is genuinely all he wants.
In the early 80s, is this highly regulated market, so he's got to get his license. There's a lot about it's called the HEC department, right? The, like, governing body that looks after them.
Yeah.
Because the baddie, the, like, equivalent of the dean of these naughty students, is the guy who's in charge of the HEC department from the government, and he takes away their license and stuff. There's a few big incidents that happen. So, one... old mate Albert comes and arrives and he wants to learn how to, he's so driven to drive. He just wants to drive. And so we play around with that for a little bit. We meet some cool people. There's Tyrone, who's this, how would you describe Tyrone?
He's an intelligent young man who sort of is deliberately plays up his craziness to the people around him, I think, to try and, like, protect himself, I guess. Like, he is honestly, he's almost the conscience of the film. Like, for the film is not all parts of it have aged brilliantly, but he is a character who kind of almost speaks truth to power as a black man in Washington DC in the 80s, who's like, he represents a viewpoint which kind of still seems relevant today.
I thought.
Like,
yeah,
very,
I agree.
Very prescient bit of characterization.
And also, it's just kind of sad how little things have changed, I guess, as well. It's a reminder of that. But he's perturbed, but sort of accepts the fact that he's, you know, working for a white dude in kind of a white man society in New York, in Washington, D.C. Gary Busey goes on, like, this really unhinged racist rant about how there's so many black people, black Americans in the US Army now that they're going to take over the country. And you kind of, like, he spins off into it and you kind of get to the end. You're like, yeah, fucking, yeah, I get it. Fair enough. There's all of these
a whole class of people in America who have been underserved by the society for ages, and now they've got access to weapons. That seems like maybe that's what should happen.
I honestly think that the what he outlined as a movie would have been a pretty interesting. I mean, obviously they just didn't have the time. They sort of went with the guy who loves driving cabs angle and said, and all power to them. But yeah,
Joel Schumacher would have been the guy to make that movie too, like a kind of blaxploitation movie, that sort of style of just a whole thousands, tens of thousands, the whole section of the African American part of the armed services uniting and overthrowing America. And some sort of egalitarian overthrow. Would have been mean.
But so Gary Busey, this is why I kind of felt like Gary Busey was channeling some of his own self. Because he'd sort of go on these crazy unhinged rants that had threads of truth. And you'd be like, all right, Gary Busey. But so, yeah, and there's these two muscle men cab drivers who I thought was a really funny gag. Their cab is broken and it can only drive in reverse.
It's a great gag.
When you first do a drive around with them, like you just hear all these sort of ADR off-camera voices going out, you're going backwards, you idiot! Like everyone yelling at these guys, and they're sort of going, hey, we're driving into the shop, our car's broken. And it's just good, silly fun.
There's so many quick gags in this. There's like hundreds of lots of little jokes, and a lot of them are done in ADR, people just yelling off camera. It's really nice. It just carries you through.
I wrote down my top three there were some funny little
before you move
evergreen
on from the brothers,
turns of phrase.
Before you move on from the brothers, sorry, did you get the sense they might have been wrestlers?
Yes.
Awesome.
And do you know, I don't know that they were, because I looked them up and there was nothing about them wrestling. They were bodybuilders and they had a movie together called The Barbarians. I think they're the Barbarian Brothers.
Correct. Yeah. I saw that in the credits when the credits rolled. They're the Barbarian Brothers.
And so the movie The Barbarians, which I mean, it could be even just as an extracurricular watch, is a 1987 sword and sorcery film. I don't know the particulars, like, because their surname is Barbarian and the movie's called The Barbarian Brothers. So it's one of those movies, I think, that sort of treads a very confusing and fine line between fiction and non-fiction. But like, they're not particularly strong performers, but they're fun guys to be around.
Yeah, they're big meatheads. Every film needs some big meatheads. Although pretty much everyone's a big meathead in this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You've got a few other drivers. You've got this very exhausted and put upon the sole woman who works at DC Cabs, and she's tired of working for them. She's tired of being mugged. But like all these kind of threads, I don't know. Like it felt like it was like a Rube Goldberg machine in terms of telling a very simple story. Because which is part of what made it feel like the movie kept going. Like the pace was all right because once they created and resolved one bit of conflict, they'd immediately move into another. So
exactly,
and establishing that DC Cabs are a shitty kick around cab company, you then meet Emerald Cabs, who are like they're the classic, they're the flash version of it, and they're the bullies.
They're the foils.
So they love,
Yeah, they're the assholes in this film. It's like, I don't know, maybe our bar is so phenomenally low because we're in the middle of watching Sex and the City 52 times, but it seemed like for as many characters as we got thrown at who were on screen, you could tell everyone had somewhere to go, like everyone had some sort of motivation, and everyone was kind of fun to hang out with. Like everyone was bringing a little something.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all very charismatic characters.
I think we definitely probably not quite seeing the movie as it was made.
Yes.
But that is, you know, just a byproduct of what we do to ourselves.
There's also, just before you do your quotes, a couple of ancillary, or not so as the plot progressed, characters that were really cool as well. There's a guy called Bongo, who basically has like four lines in the whole movie, but he is sort of made out to be like quite a like Rasta dude, isn't he? Isn't that his vibe?
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck, what does he get but asked? Actually, he gets asked about...
He wants to do a drive around. He goes, I drive around so you can tell me about Jamaica and Kingston. And he's like... Yeah. I'm from Cleveland.
Good gag. Fucking good gag. And then there's Mr. Rhythm.
Gag.
Mr. Rhythm is a borderline homeless dude, I think. Does he work for them?
Yeah, it's hard to know exactly how he fits in, but he had one of my favorite lines. So these are all delivered by different people at different times in the movie, but there were three like evergreen lines that I thought were funny. The third one was... when they get into an argument with Emerald Cabs at the diner.
Yeah.
And in response to a put down, one of the people for DC Cabs says, come here, fuckface. Come here. And fuckface is just funny.
Yeah, it always is. It's timeless. It's a timeless
it's
insult.
It's really good. The second one was towards the end of the movie when the kidnappers. So I don't quite know where these characters come from, but these kidnappers kidnap this diplomat's children. It's in DC, so there are diplomats crawling all over the background of this film. None of them are walking. It's crazy. Hold on, I've just got to reject a phone call. Sorry, Tim.
I thought you were literally pausing for laughter from that lukewarm gag.
No. My phone started ringing. So the kidnappers take them, and there's this one of the kidnappers is a woman, and she is sort of saying she's saying we should kill the kids who are doing really bad acting because they don't look scared at all. But you would be if a woman with a gun under your chin was saying we should kill these kids. But one of the kids is so nonplussed by this, she actually says, "You are a pitiful bitch."
It's so good because the girl's like six.
Yeah,
it delivers the line with such aplomb.
To know the swear word is one thing, but to also use pitiful, like pitiful is a 50 cent word, that's class. But my favorite line was delivered by Mr. Rhythm himself. After Albert's had a rough night, he goes to some sort of ladies' night at a male strip club. And then as the strip club's closing, all of the cab drivers, they pull up their beaten up cabs and they get on the bonnets and the roofs and they start dancing. And this flock of very excited young women come out of the club. And they pile into the cabs, and all of the drivers drive away to some unknown place where I assume they have some sort of crazy sex orgy. Like that celebration of these cab drivers, like the idea of how valuable they are or how desirable they are at that moment in the movie, sort of syncs up perfectly with Albert's understanding or estimation of them. It's like cab driving is this holy grail of professionalism, or, you know, it's sort of... It's not really tethered to reality, but as everyone leaves, no one's got room in their car for him because he doesn't have his own car and he's this new fish. He finds Mr. Rhythm later that night and he says, you got any advice for me? And the character who plays Mr. Rhythm says, Mr. Rhythm, say, if you can go through the night till dawn without committing suicide, then you okay. And it was just so like... I don't know. It really floored me. It came out of nowhere like a freight train, but I thought it really got a big rise out of me at the time.
But it's that awesome... That's what this movie does so well, is that there's all these little... For as goofy and funny and comedic as this film is, either intentionally or not, there's all these beautiful bits of social commentary which permeate through and are like, fuck, that is dead on. That is right on, Joel Schumacher. Well done, you. And that's definitely one of them. Of just serving this homeless dude as being this fountain of wisdom while he's this incredibly downtrodden man. So there's like a couple of big events that happen that drive the plot of this film. So yeah, we open with Albert being introduced to the cabs. We fuck around with them for a bit. Then there is a violin. This is not a compelling storyline, but basically they'd never say this, but they make it out to be a Stradivarius, really. An incredibly valuable violin gets left in a cab and it's worth $500,000, and they assume whoever will find it will get a big cash reward. And so everyone goes nuts trying to track it down, and it turns out that the homeless guy, Mr. Rhythm, has had it and been playing it like a ukulele for a bit, which
pretty
I can't,
funny.
Can't imagine is doing good things for the instrument itself, but they figure it out. They manage to get it back to its owner, and a $10,000 reward is offered up. And this kicks off a whole bunch of events where, so the guy who's running the hack department, which regulates and governs all the cabs in the city, he goes, Albert will, no, what's his name? The guy who owns the cab company, Harold, will get all of the money because he owns all the cabs. And they're kind of okay with this because Harold's their boss, they respect him, and they expect he'll probably do something fair with it. And then Harold's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. Everyone's going to get a slice of the pie, but just so you know, this business is about to like cease operation because we have a real lack of money. So just putting it out there, if you would like to give it back to me, your share, you will be an investor in this company. And everyone sort of dwells on this and are trying to figure out what to do. And in the ensuing days, his wife takes all of the money and their house and leaves him. And it's then revealed that she's been sleeping with his foil for the film, the antagonist, who is the head of the hack department, the sort of dean of this animal house. And that's one of the couple of times we get to see him pull out his flamethrower, which is awesome. And then the other separate, like, big plot event is, yeah, the young buck, Albert, who this movie's kind of about, gets kidnapped alongside these two school kids. Who is it who's driving them to the... to the embassy every day? Oh, sorry, to the school where all the diplomats' kids go?
I can't remember.
Is it Tyrone?
It
doesn't matter, but it's one of them.
It was slightly confusing. Like, the kidnapping did kind of... I mean, I understand what they were doing, but it, like... When I hear all this information presented back, I'm like, yeah, that was in the movie. There's just enough going on that you could, like, you're never challenged. You can follow it all, but it doesn't all quite add up.
Yeah, but it's fine. It's all fine, and nothing's reinventing the plot wheel, is it? It's like thing's pretty played out, but
honestly,
it's all good.
I mean,
there's enough people having fun.
The biggest compliment I can give this movie is it has done nothing to diminish the value of my day.
Oh, high praise.
I honestly, you know, I feel like I might have watched that movie anyway because, you know, obviously I'm in the throes of the fest right now. Like, it's the sort of thing you just put on and watch during the day anyway just to while away an hour and 40 minutes.
Absolutely.
And I'm so happy for that to have been my movie watching experience instead of what I know it will be time and time again while I'm here, which is Sex and the City.
I do have to pick a bone with something you said earlier, though, Guy, that the kids who get kidnapped from the school are bad actors. Wrong. You couldn't be more wrong. I reckon they were fantastically cast and their performances were A+, because their whole deal, and I think they served as, in an ocean of comedic performances, I think they were some of the strongest performers, because... Albert's really scared. He's this, you know, wet behind the ears southerner who's come into Washington, D.C. and doesn't know what for. And these kids are like, oh, is this your first kidnapping? He's like, yeah. Oh, no, they say, have you never been kidnapped before? He's like, yeah. And they're like, oh, don't worry. This is our third time. You're going to be fine. And they're six. They're both like 6 years old. And they're these jaded... you know, kids of these rich diplomats who have gone through the rigor so much, and they're just like throwing out these sensational insults at the kidnappers, and they don't give a fuck.
Yeah, it is when Albert gets out of his ropes and blindfold and to reveal that the kids have already done it because they're so experienced. That's,
they applaud him. They clap. They're like, "Yay, you did it!"
Yeah,
that cracks me up. That was a laugh out loud moment for me.
It is a good bit of fun. Yeah, look, I think it's just, it was just a pleasant morning. Like, it was a nice thing to do. I feel like, I feel relaxed. I feel like it's part of a day off. And
well, I got to ask you some questions, though.
Please.
Because it feels like you're just, you're floating at this point. So this film was obviously, it came out in 1983. There's a lot of pretty fucking outdated lingo, dialogue, references, attitudes. How do you sort of reconcile all of that sort of stuff, Monty? Seeing a film like that, there's, you know, casual mentions of the N-word, particularly by Gary Busey, that seemed to really smack you across the face when you're watching it in 2019. But what do you make of all that?
There's nothing to be done about it. It's just the movie we watched, you know? Like, Gary Busey's character, certainly, I guess we can just call him Gary Busey, I'd get pretty uneasy or nervous whenever he'd start talking for longer than a couple of sentences. But I was like, well, what are you going to do? Gary Busey's going to Gary Buse.
It's 1983 as well. It's sort of, you know, these things are products of their time, aren't they?
Yeah, measuring old movies from different eras against modern standards is always a challenge. Like, it definitely jarred, you know. Like, it definitely, you notice it, like, obviously enough to talk about it. But I was sort of just, like, the whole movie felt so low stakes to me. I was sort of just like, whatever. Just keep presenting this information to me, and I'll keep plodding through the film. Like, it was. What did you think? Did it do anything to you?
Look, I don't want to introduce sort of personal politics to what is a fun and very stupid movie review podcast, but like, I do find it interesting that there's some attempts to kind of remove and ban references to stuff from old works like this, like old bits of art and literature and film and music, where it's just like, I don't know, they were products of their time. That's how people used to thought, and I think we should be able to be exposed to those ideas now and go, that's dumb and we don't do it. But
surely people are not coming for DC Cabs, Joel
Schumacher's, I don't think so.
1983 comedy action hit, semi-hit.
No, I don't think so. But that overarching umbrella just feeds into what I think about this, which is like, yeah, this movie came out in 1983. Like, that's pretty much my attitude, start and stop.
Yeah, it definitely came out in 1983, and I will fight anyone who says otherwise.
Had you heard of Irene Cara before?
No, but she is a genuine pop star, so that was probably quite a big get for the movie.
I imagine so. They wear it like that's the case, like it was a very big deal that she was there. She pops up in the film, and this is at a point where Tyrone has fucking bailed on the cab company. Everyone else decided to stick it out, but Tyrone left. What? I can't remember exactly what happened when he left. I like just watched this, because he didn't get the money out, did he? From the violin shareholder payout? Or did he?
What do you mean?
Well, like, he left the cab company, but...
Yeah, and then he started hawking, like, Americana merchandise on the street.
Yeah, dressed as sort of Uncle Sam. But I don't think he got the money from, like, the violin, like, earnings, did he? He didn't get his share out and then leave.
No. Well, no one got their share.
Yeah. Fuck, I don't know.
That's why Albert had to front his savings, because all of the money that they'd anticipated was gone, and then somehow they stretched his $6,060 of savings into like a fully brand new fleet of cars, jackets, licenses. Like,
well, they had the $10,000 as well from the violin money, so they had like $16,000 to revamp everything. And in 1983, guy, that was about $1 billion.
How much of the money did his wife Myrna take?
Oh fuck yeah, I don't know. They don't.
See,
they
I thought what happened is that they'd all thought it was going to be okay, and then Myrna takes all the money, and Albert comes and saves the day, and he's like,
true.
"We're all going to bail out, but here's the situation: I got these savings. It's not quite $10,000, but
now,
if we work together."
Myrna is a character in this film who is the wife of the guy who owns the cab company, and she works there just like 24/7 on sort of a reception type thing, because they've got someone else doing dispatch, and the only time we really learn anything about her is Albert's studying for his exam with Harold, who owns the cab company, and she comes home and she's like, there's no beers for me, you guys drank all the beers, you know, I need to drink a beer and while I watch Johnny Carson so I can get to sleep, and there's a big to-do about that, and that's kind of it. And I know she was there to be presented as like a queen bitch you're supposed to hate, but I was like, I get where you're coming from. You're probably not drawing any money whatsoever out of your husband's shitly run cab company, and you're there, you know, 60 hours a week, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Eventually they fill out her character to give other reasons to not like her, but initially I was like, everything that Myrna is saying is well within her rights as a partner in a relationship. Like,
yeah,
it's just
get it.
basic courtesies. But again, Tim, I bring you back to the point you made not 5 minutes ago. This movie was made in 1983, and if anyone comes into this apartment and tells me otherwise, I will push them down an empty elevator shaft.
Speaking of that, do you know what quote really stuck with me? And I think this is a Gary Busey one as well. I can't remember how he gets into it, but he says, "Oh, woman, they've got 50% of the money and 100% of the pussy." There's a few little things like that where it's just like, fucking hell, man. That's funny. That's a funny line, you know?
That is a funny line, I think, even in 2019, I think that's a funny line. Because it's factually accurate.
Yeah, there's one guy who doesn't get fleshed out at all, who just, his whole thing is he keeps saying it's hard to be a man.
Yeah.
He'd be like an alt-right dude, I think, these days, if he was still around.
Yeah. He's not given a lot to do. He's Hispanic, and he dresses well, and his whole shtick is, it's tough.
Did you watch to the end, to the very, very end of the credits?
When the Grim Reaper or the Merchant of Death gets into the cab.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I'm just on the cast page now to check up on who people are, and it's got Timothy Carey as Death. And I was like, what the fuck? This isn't Bill and Ted. Death isn't in this. And I was like, oh, it's that guy at the end. He is Death. I just assumed that was Schumacher himself putting himself in the film, because there's no need for that scene to be there.
No, it felt like a gag that they came up with in the writer's room, and they were like, "Ah, oh, we'll just stick it at the end."
Yeah. He jumps into Tyrone's cab. Tyrone's reading a comic book or something.
The credits do a fantastic job of keeping you engaged the whole way through, though, because it's like you almost feel like there's a little bit more story being bled out. You never get just the black screen with rolling text. It's always like moving images, and they're not bloopers. Like, they're canon within the story of the film. It's a technique that you don't see a lot of anymore, but I was like, okay, you've got me here.
There's, by the way, the thing we missed out. So everything wraps up pretty neatly. So old mate gets the money from from Albert. Maybe he loses all the violin money to his wife, but he gets all the money that Albert's arrived with from his inheritance, $6,000. Revamps the company. The company's got a brand new lease on life and is doing fabulously well. Then Albert gets kidnapped with the kids. They eventually save him. And then the end is the city of Washington, D.C. throws a parade for this cab company, which is fucking dope and reminded me a lot of Ghostbusters. And I was like, what a cool 80s thing in film they used to do, which they should bring back, which maybe will be in the next Avengers, where you just get a nice parade at the end.
Yeah, the parade, I don't know, I was like, okay. They kind of got themselves out of a jam they created, but sure, we'll have a parade.
I think it was because they rescued those kids, especially when
the kids were fine. Like you said, the kids weren't worried. Anyway, I'm happy to have watched the movie. I've got nothing left to say about it. It was honestly a fucking perfectly fine way to spend my morning, and for that, to my Patreon pals, I am grateful.
Yeah, I feel like we owe you some money. So we're incredibly grateful that you throw us these bones every now and then, in amongst doing, like, you know, the Breen verse and all the other shit, the like half-baked animated films that never quite got finished that you throw at us. I really do appreciate you mixing it up with just some Gary Busey nonsense and Mr. T star vehicles. That are perfectly fine and enjoyable to watch. So I would recommend DC Cabs. You know, put your earmuffs on for the huffing and the cussing. There's a bit of 1983 bled into the film, but it's fun and it's not very long, and I'm so grateful for it. Guy, how cool is it that we got to watch that today? I wish you a great rest of the day.
Hey, same to you, my friend. And thanks to all of you for listening and being a part of the Patreon. I hope you're having a good life.
Love you guys. Bye-bye, Patreon pals. Bye.
Bye. See you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.